What do you want? I got a dying man in a chair. No, absolutely not. No. Oh, she already got it. Yeah, she's got them, too. A baseball card collection. Oh, no. Look, I'll give her the 150 bucks it's worth. She wants the cards. Well, why? Because she knows I liked them. All right, I'll tell you what. You tell her to take those cards and I hope she chokes on them. Oh, I love those cards. I spent my whole life collecting those cards.
Hey, Doc, I think the Novocaine's starting to wear off a little bit.
Shut up, buddy! Just shut up! God, I'm so mad. I'm shaking.
Rest in peace to the legendary Joe Flaherty.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 464, submission number 1895, How Ken Jennings Almost Didn't Happen. This episode is dedicated to the June 2nd, 2004 edition of Jeopardy. By the time you're listening to this, Jeopardy, that is March 30th, would have come and gone. And this particular year is a very special Jeopardy. It is the 60th anniversary of my favorite quiz show in the whole wide world, not involving Bill Cullen.
Which but one?
My favorite quiz show in the whole wide world, not involving Bill Cullen.
That's what I said. Which one?
Yeah, which one?
Blockbusters.
Oh.
See, I thought it was like Pass the Buck or something, or Winning Streak.
Now, hold on. Do you think in the UK they have like a national holiday for Blockbusters involving Bob Holness or something?
It would not surprise me.
I would like to take a pee day.
It's Jeopardy, and this is the special Jeopardy episode. And of all the things we could talk about in Jeopardy that we haven't talked about yet, this is the one that is left over. Although, give us a few more months, we can come up with something else. In the beginning of 2021, Ken Jennings, a software engineer who had become our generation's answer to Dr. Joyce Brothers, in a sense, did something he never thought he'd be doing. Hosting an episode of the game show that made him a household name some 17 years earlier. He had just won a primetime event, Jeopardy! The Greatest of All Time, beating fellow Jeopardy! Greats Brad Rutter and James Holzhauer. He was a fixture on Masterminds. He and the other two GOAT players were being eyed for a reboot of The Chase. He was an expert on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He had published 2 books. He was active on social media. He had a podcast. He was on 1 versus 100. He won Grand Slam in 2007. He was on season 2 of 500 Questions for all of 4 questions. He was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire as a contestant and Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? And his winnings on Jeopardy lifetime totaled over $4.3 million.
And Greg, he has cards in both Upper Deck Goodwin Champions and Allen and Ginter 2007.
Yeah, and I believe he has a relic card in Goodwin Champions. I know James Holzhauer does. I do have one.
Well, I know James Holzhauer has an autograph card in Allen and Ginter, I'm guessing probably 2018, 2019-ish. And obviously Ken Jennings has one in 2007. Austin Rogers has one too. Speaking of Jeopardy champs.
But back to history here. He would be the first of a series of guest hosts to keep the ship afloat following the death of the show's beloved host, Alex Trebek. That summer, Mike Richards, the executive producer at the time, was chosen to officially succeed Alex. A move that, for reasons that we're not even going to get into, was very brief.
See the 2021 year in review for more about that. By the way, ignore the noise in the background. Some contractors were working on Chico's bathroom there.
Michael Davies, who was signed on to produce product for Sony at the time via his Embassy Row shingle, was appointed interim executive producer, and one of his first tasks was to name a host for the show. Ultimately, he decided on two. Ken Jennings for the dayside part, and Mayim Bialik for primetime and event programming. Mayim Bialik stepped aside in solidarity with the writer's strike, even though the SAG-AFTRA network code still allowed her to host, which led through one thing having to do with another to her leaving the show, and Ken Jennings named the sole host, something fans, and a certain executive producer, ultimately, had argued should have been the case from the outset. However, it almost didn't happen. Let's go back a bit, but we talked about the history of the show before, so I'll be brief. Merv Griffin was relatively unscathed during the quiz show scandals of the 1950s. He used those scandals as an impetus to create a new type of quiz show with his wife, Julanne. They would give the answers, and you would have to come up with the questions. He pitched the idea to NBC under the title, What's the Question? Ed Vane, who was an executive with the network at the time, told Merv that the show needed more. He said, and now I'm quoting, it doesn't have enough Jeopardies. With Vane's words still ringing in his mind, he went back and reworked the format. Instead of one round of 10 categories with 10 clues each, two rounds of 6 categories with 5 clues each would be used. NBC bought it without a pilot, and on March 30th, 1964, at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, with actor Art Fleming at the helm, the network premiered What's the Question, now with the name Jeopardy. And, of course, the rest is history. That was one fork of our little history lesson for this week. In the other fork, Kenneth Wayne Jennings III was born in Edmonds, Washington on May 3, 1974, a few months before the start of Jeopardy's final season in its original run on NBC. After spending a majority of his life overseas with his father, Jennings enrolled at the University of Washington. After 2 years of missionary work with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, he transferred to Brigham Young University, where he graduated in 2000 with a double major in English and computer science. During his time there, he was a player and eventual captain of his school's Quiz Bowl team, and when he graduated, he took a job as a software engineer creating trivia games for computers. During this time, something else was happening in the game show industry. The rise of the million-dollar game show, starting with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And every show that spun off of that, we covered all of this, by the way, and culminating with the likes of Survivor and Big Brother in the year 2000. Jeopardy, now in its second decade, was starting to look old. In the early 2000s, a couple of moves were put into place to rejuvenate the show. The first was doubling the money available from $1 to $500 in the single Jeopardy round and $200 to $1,000 in the double Jeopardy round to $2 to $1,000 in the single Jeopardy round and $400 to $2,000 in the double Jeopardy round. The second move made would be the most advantageous to Ken Jennings. You see, before 2003, Jeopardy contestants were allowed up to 5 shows, save, of course, for tournaments and other special events. You get 5 wins. After that, they cut you a check, they give you the keys to a new car, and we'll see you down the road. At the beginning of the show's 20th season in 2003, the rules were changed to allow contestants to remain on the show as long as they continued to win. From here on out, the sky's the limit, the show touted. No longer limited to 5 episodes, the longest streak seen since the change would be Tom Walsh winning $186,900 in 8 games in January 2004. Fast forward 6 months to June 2nd, 2004. Jerry Harvey, a freelance educator from California, Missouri, had won $70,002 in 2 games. And if you think about it, that's an average of like $35,001 per game, which is pretty darn amazing, all things considered. Clearly, Jerry Harvey was in a position to win a third game. His two challengers that day, a fundraiser from New York named Julia Lazarus, and a software engineer from Salt Lake City named Ken Jennings. So we go into the Jeopardy round with these categories: biography subtitles, let's clean up, pardon me, quotable recent movies, playtime, and episodes, EPI in quotes. You know what that means. 10 clues in, and Jerry finds the Daily Double under 800 biography subtitles. He decides to bet all 1,800 of his winnings thus far on this clue: an entrepreneur, bargain billionaire. Jerry loses everything on who is Woolworth. That would be F.W. Woolworth. Unfortunately, the correct response would be who is Sam Walton. And at the end of the first half of play, Jerry has nothing. Julia has 2,000. Ken has 4,600. And by the end of the round, Ken almost doubles to 8,000 to Julia's 4,800 and Jerry's 1,800. That gave Jerry the pick of the board in Double Jeopardy with these 6 categories: H names, that's H in quotes, you know what that means, actresses and playwrights, vocabulary, senatorial successors, country time, and Lemonade, the writers of Jeopardy with their historic sense of humor there. Jerry would begin with 400 vocabulary, which would be gotten by Julia. Ken would get the next 2 clues, leading up to the Daily Double in 1,600 vocabulary. By this time, Ken had $10,000. If he doubled up, this game would be near impossible to catch up from. He decides only to bet the max amount on the board, 2,000, on this clue: prefab metal sheets used to print newspaper gave us this term for standard wording, as in contracts.
Can we jump in?
Yeah.
What is boilerplate?
That is correct. Ken went with boilerplate and is now up to $12,000. Julia would find the other Daily Double under $1,200 in actresses and playwrights. By this point, Julia would have $6,000. She bets 5,000 of it on this. Chapter 1 of her life with Neil Simon began in 1973 when she was cast in his play, The Good Doctor.
The only person I can think of is Elaine Joyce, because Elaine Joyce was married to Neil Simon, but I know that's wrong.
Elaine Joyce was married to Neil Simon, but so was Marsha Mason. Julia is in with the correct response, and she has $11,000. Going into Final Jeopardy, Ken leads with $20,000. Julia has $18,600, and Jerry has $7,400. according to JArchive, in final Jeopardy wagering strategy, conjecture that betting only enough to stay ahead of a second place player who is within two-thirds of the score of the leader and who also wagers to keep the third place player locked out is called Shore's conjecture. This gives the leader a better chance of winning than does making the shutout bet. Strategic wagers presuppose a second place player's aptitude to obey the two-thirds rule, though they may sometimes win even when the second place player does not, and are in direct violation of Boyd's rule. The ideal wagers, according to the calculator, Jerry cannot cover a rational wager by Julia, but if Julia decides for some reason to wager everything, he can eke out a win on a triple stumper if he wagers no more than 4,600. Julia scores within 4/5 of Ken's, so wager between 2801 if you're playing passively, or 3799 if you're playing aggressively, beating Ken's maximum safe bet of the difference between your scores while still covering against a doubled score on Jerry's part. Ken has one of two options. He can bet 17,201 to cover Julia, or if he wants to use shortage, because this is a strong form of Shore's conjecture, he can wager 2,401 to lock Jerry out. So that is where everybody's mind is at, going into the final Jeopardy with the category, the 2000 Olympics. Here's the clue. She's the first female track and field athlete to win medals in 5 different events at a single Olympics.
Well, gee, it's the 2000 Olympics. What female track and field star was there at the 2000 Olympics? Oh, who is Marion Jones?
And if I may say so, this just goes to prove that trivia sometimes ages like milk.
Oh, yeah, in more ways than one.
It even says so in the script. Alex is like, and she's still going strong.
Oh, God, no. No, Alex, if only you knew what we would know now.
Again, aged like milk. Here's the audio of Final Jeopardy from that episode.
Jerry Harvey, we start with you. What did you put down? Which athlete did you think of? Marion Jones, you are correct. And you add a dollar. You go to 7,401. Let's go to Julia Lazarus. Did she come up with Marion Jones? She's shaking her head. Why? She was going for somebody else, and I can't figure out who. Gail?
I can't figure out who either.
Oh. But somebody named Gail. Every girl named Gail watching the program today is going to be very happy. You lost $37.99. That drops you down to $14,801. Let's go to Ken Jennings. And even 20 grand going into final. Who is Jones? And we will accept that in terms of female athletes. There aren't that many. And you've got $17,201 more for a 37,201 total. And you become the Jeopardy champion. Great game, players. Thank you so much. We'll see you again next time. Hello.
Well, in all fairness, what was there in women's sports at the time? There was the WNBA.
Olympic track and field events. The World Cup.
Oh, that's true. That just happened.
Did the WNBA's competitor, were they still alive in in 2000? I think the answer is yes. But 2004, what was it, the ABA or something
the
like
ABL.
That?
The ABL.
The ABL was long gone by 2000.
By 2000 it was gone? I thought it lasted until maybe 2000. I knew it was gone by 2004.
It was gone by 2000. I think it didn't last till 99.
It lasted from 1996 to 1998.
Okay, it was a Ooh. Year off.
2 seasons. That's harsh.
You know who coached in the ABL? Casey Jones, the former Celtics head coach.
Boston legend, yeah. Hall of Famer. Passed away a couple years ago.
Where else can you see teams named the Nashville Noise and the Portland Power?
Ooh. The Nashville Noise.
I'm looking at former players in the ABL. Tanya Edwards coaching at Alcorn State now. Jackie Joyner Kersey was a former player.
Wait, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know she played basketball, Jackie Joyner Kersee.
Neither did I. Dawn Staley, who is now the coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm not going to make an obvious joke involving who she's been in a feud with, because I know that person's going to have some problems of their own real soon. Wink, wink.
Don't read the Washington Post on Monday.
Oh, I knew that's who you're talking about.
Why did you think I was going to wink, wink?
Well, I just wanted the confirmation from Chico. I figured that's who you're talking about. I just was not so sure. I needed that confirmation.
Somebody at Louisiana State University has never heard of the Streisand effect.
The story behind that response is that Jennings, in an interview with Vulture, said that as a big Olympics fan, he was excited about the Final Jeopardy category until he realized that the clue was about the 2000 games, which happened to coincide with his honeymoon. He said, and now I'm quoting, "I thought, well, this might be the end for me, but it turned out to be something guessable. The answer was Marion Jones. I know the answer." So when he explained that Trebek revealed his answer, he realized it looked like he just guessed a random last name. Because if you are a verdant and vibrant quizzer like I am, you know something called Lucky Johnson. If you don't know the answer, just say Johnson. You may not be right, but hey, it's a guess. But after a very long pause, which, according to Ken, seemed like an eternity, he got the okay. Quoting Ken, "I remember feeling this wave of euphoria when Alex said it was correct. Somehow, against all odds, in these 20 minutes, I survived. The perception of time was crazy. It felt like 30 seconds. I couldn't keep up what was going on. I had survived." And it's actually a really good thing, too, because had that not happened, Julia would win $14,801, even though she failed to respond correctly. But because he is right, Ken wins a total of $37,201 for his first game. He'd go on to win the next three by a wide margin to the point where Final Jeopardy was an afterthought. And then Game 5 on June 8th, Ken would face Corey Hallgren from Noblesville, Indiana, and Paul Filson out of Powell, Ohio. By this time, Ken had amassed $126,201. The Jeopardy round consisted of national anthems, TV Podge, Colors of the Rainbow, All the President's Children, Extra Helpings, extra in quotes, and I'm on a Diet. Ken bet $1,800 on a daily double under 800 national anthems, the clue being it's the only Central American country whose national anthem is sung in English.
The only Central American country?
Only Central American country.
Belize.
Belize is correct. And at the end of the Jeopardy round, Ken has $6,600. Corey has $6,000. Paula has $5,400. It is a nail biter. Going into the Double Jeopardy round with the categories opera, celebrity surname spelling, quotations, B folks, 1845, and four letter words. Ken finds the first daily double under opera for $800 and bets $18,000 on Act 1 of this opera opens at Pinkerton's house in Nagasaki.
I'm not that good with opera. Is it like Madame Butterfly?
It is Madame Butterfly.
Okay.
Ken got that right. And then Paula finds the other daily double and has a chance to make this a very close game, should she choose to. She bets $8,500 on a clue under four-letter words for $1,200. From the Latin words for no one and empty come these two words that cancel a contract.
Does Greg want to take a guess before I jump in?
I have no clue, so.
So Greg's answer would have been null and void anyhow.
Ha! I see what you did there. So going into the final Jeopardy, Corey has 5,200. Paula has 17,500. Ken has 32,400. Ken was out in front, but for the first time since that first game, it was not a runaway. In this particular case, we are dealing with a crush. In Final Jeopardy wagering strategy, the scenario in which the score of the player in second place is between one half and two thirds of the score of the player in first place is defined as a crush. Under this scenario, given rational wagers by the players, a win is possible for the second place player only if the first place player misses Final Jeopardy and the second place player gets it right. Here, the first place player should bet enough so as to have at least $1 more than the second place player if the second place player bets at all. And the second place player should bet at all since he or she must give the correct response to win anyway. Unless he or she has a lock for second place and would prefer to limit his or her wager to protect that position. This was coined by Michael Dupuy.
Post-production correction, the name is pronounced Michael Dupree.
The author of How to Get on Jeopardy and Win and the 1996 Tournament of Champions winner. Corey was less than the difference between first and second place, so unless they both blunder, he's competing for second place with no hopes of first. Wager as much as you desire, but remember you have better chances of advancing to second place if you have a larger sum left over on a triple stumper. Paula has the hopes of surpassing Ken if she comes up with the correct response. She should bet at least 14,901 to force Ken to wager to win, but if she's content on holding on to second place, wager no more than 7099 to protect her second place position from being usurped by Corey. Ken needs only to wager 2601, but no more than 21,999. The final Jeopardy category for Ken's fifth game, European Islands. The clue, Gavdos, an islet administratively part of this larger island, is Europe's southernmost point. And I will let you know that nobody got this right.
I got an idea. I don't know how good my idea is. I've got it down to two answers. I'll say my first and official answer. We'll see if I got it right there. And then the secondary one I'll throw out. Is it Cyprus?
It is not Cyprus.
Okay. Is it Malta?
It is not Malta.
Oh, okay.
Now, hold on. I got an answer, okay?
All right.
What is chair?
No.
So what's the right answer?
The correct response is, what is Crete?
I thought you said what country?
Island.
Oh, I thought the question asked what the country where Gavros was located.
Nope.
Wait, did you say Davros?
I said Gavdos.
Gavdos, okay. Well, whatever. Oh, okay. I was thinking Davros too, but okay. I thought it asked for a country. And admittedly, I'm not paying 100% attention. I mean, it sounds like a Greek name. But I just thought saying what is Greece is way, way too obvious. That's why I went with Cyprus, because Cyprus is just off of Greece. Okay, whatever. We all got it wrong. Thank you very much for making us look like idiots.
No problem. You would not be the only ones who got it wrong, because Corey, Paula, and Ken all missed it. Corey held on by betting only 1,800. Paula bet the whole nut. And Ken, perhaps sensing that this was going to be a tough clue to crack, only bet 2601. Ken just bet enough to keep his hold on the title. Under normal game rules, that is pre-2003, Ken Jennings would be done with a total of $156,000 and a new car. But this was not pre-2003, and Ken Jennings was just getting started. I have his baseball card back, according to J Archive, who we've been culling copiously from in the preparation of this episode. After playfully tying Brian Weichel's single-day cash winnings record of 52,000 set in his third game on 2003, three times in July 9th of 2004, July 12th of 2004, and July 22nd of 2004, Ken shattered it with a $75,000 finish in his 38th game, the final game of season 20, on July 23rd, 2004. Shortly before the end of his streak, he would shatter it again with a $55,099 win on November 24th, 2004. And Ken's single-day record would last over 6 years until Roger Craig broke it with a $77,000 finish in his second game on September 14th, 2010.
Wait a minute. The former 49ers running back broke Ken's record?
No.
Oh. You see, Mike, you didn't expect me to reference the former 49ers running back Roger Craig.
No, I was expecting you to reference the San Francisco Giants manager, Roger Craig.
How confusing must that have been? There were two sports figures in San Francisco named Roger Craig in the late 80s, early 90s.
So Ken Jennings did an interview on CBS Sunday Morning with Mo Rocca. The interview itself is on YouTube if you want to take in all of it, all 7 minutes of it. Obviously, we're not going to put all 7 minutes of the interview on this episode, but just going to give you some of the Cliff Notes version. Ken Jennings says, "I realize I'm going to be a Jeopardy champion for the rest of my life. And it was just an immediate rush of euphoria that it's hard to explain. As good as the birth of my kids, I can say that now that they're teens and out of the house, it was just an amazing moment." So, a microsecond decision, according to CBS, which would lead to 74 straight victories, $2.5 million, game show immortality, and eventually, the job as host. And of course, because we are living now in the future where people who want to say things can say things, fans realize if Alex ruled the other way, Ken would not have any of this. He wouldn't have the straight victories. He wouldn't have the multitude of game show appearances. He wouldn't have over $4.1 million, and he wouldn't have a cush job for the rest of his choosing. One social media user wrote, "It would have been his only and long forgotten appearance." Another one said, "It's so strange to think about how we were a judge's ruling away from Ken just being a footnote in the annals of Jeopardy history." And a third says, "It's interesting to think how things would be so different today if Ken lost that very first game. It's crazy. You wonder if Ken hadn't spawned that, do we get the resurrection of Brad Rutter? Or does he just go down in the annals of yet another five-day champion? Do we get a Watson tournament? Do we get the GOAT? Do we get our current Masters tournament? Do we get a reboot of The Chase on ABC? Do we get Masterminds on GSN? All of this from one name and one decision. Amazing to think about the road not taken, isn't it?
It does bring up a lot of what ifs.
If they didn't give him the thumbs up, we wouldn't even be talking about this. He would just be some guy from Salt Lake City who's still designing trivia software. And who knows who would have been hosting Jeopardy right now? Probably Jeff Probst if he was still available. Ken Jennings never would have written his many books. Well, just the one big one, Brainiac.
No, he wrote a couple of books. That's his Brainiac. I mean, there's his Trivia Almanac. He also did, like, I don't want to say 1,001 places you need to visit before you die, but I thought he did something like that. He's done definitely more than just Brainiac.
He never would have been on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader winning $500,000 there. He never would have been on Grand Slam winning $100,000 there. There never would have been an Ultimate Tournament of Champions where Brad Rother would ultimately beat him, bring up this, you know, friendly rivalry between two trivia titans. And he never would have been, like I said at the beginning of the show, our generation's answer to Dr. Joyce Brothers. So there you have it. Ken Jennings, right now, he is the king of the trivia universe. But were it for a twist of fate, the June 2nd, 2004 episode of Jeopardy, Ken Jennings would have just been a thing on TV. Hey, speaking of game shows,
it's time for this weekend match game, Hollywood Square, Power History.
It's the first full week of April of 1984, week 23 of 39, and your guests this week are Steven Schnitzer, Roxy Roker, Bruce Baum, Judy Landers, Steve Allen, Brian Mitchell, Gloria Loring, and Jane Meadows. In terms of wins this week, this is a big money week. On Monday, nobody won, but that was the only day nobody won this week. Nobody won big money then, but Gloria, her contestant, won $20,000 on Tuesday. Another $20,000 went out the door with Jane Meadows on Wednesday, and then another $20,000 went out the door with John Bauman on Thursday, and then Friday, only $10,000. But still, $70,000 out the door this week. It sort of makes up for the last couple of weeks where wins were very sparse. Oh, next week we're going to talk about somebody that we really enjoy. We talked about him in the past a little bit. But also, we're going to talk about a female. I believe this is her first time on the show. This might be the second, but I think this is her first time on the show. We talked about her 2 months ago because she made a very rare appearance on TV, at least in the last, say, 35 years or so, on a Super Bowl pregame show. I think Greg knows who I'm talking about.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes.
That's it for this week. Chico, time to close everything up.
Well, before I close everything up, we haven't done this in quite a while. I have asked Microsoft Copilot to write a limerick about Ken Jennings.
Oh, a limerick.
Well, I'm more surprised about Microsoft Copilot, not ChatGPT.
Look, ChatGPT, that's old hat. Microsoft Copilot, that's now where it's at.
Ha, I see what you did there. Join me, if you will, for another edition of It Was a Thing Poetry Corner. Ken Jennings, a trivia whiz. On Jeopardy, he made quite a fizz. With wit and quick thinking, his answers were unblinking, and his record remains hard to dismiss.
Wait, what does this have to do with the Miz? Who's dissing the Miz?
Yeah, I will not stand for anyone who disrespects the Miz, or Truth for that matter. And once again, I'm going to point out the Miz's half-court shot in the Celebrity All-Star game a year ago. That should have counted.
You're darn right it should have.
Well, it looks like we're headed into Final Jeopardy. So all that's left is for me to remind you that you can go to our website, editwasathingontv.com, where you can listen to the 463 episodes that preceded this one. We've got all sorts of bonuses, mini-sodes, live shows, instant reactions, delayed reactions, best of editions in case you missed it the first time.
Now, as you're listening to this, I'm going to say Monday's episode, because you haven't found out, or I've told you about this, but Monday's best of, which is already out now, is going to be for WrestleMania weekend tag team from Pilot Month 2020.
Nice. With Rowdy Roddy Piper and Jesse Ventura as rookie cops.
Yes. That was a great episode. That was episode 50. I gotta say, though, the best part of that episode was talking about the commercials and us dissing that freaking bootleg McRib that McDonald's thought was going to be like a big hit. No, no McDonald's. Your grilled steak sandwich or whatever the hell it was, no one's going to go for that.
That was the genesis of Pilot Month as we know it. By the way, that's coming later in the year. We've already got it full stacked. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Stay tuned for May.
But in the meantime, don't forget we're on all social media, including Instagram, Threads, Mastodon. It Was a Thing on TV is the handle you're looking for, unless you're on Facebook. That's It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And if you're looking for us on Mastodon, It Was a Thing on TV at tvwatch.party. Also, don't forget, subscribe to the podcast where fine podcasts can be streamed. Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Audible, our independent streamers. We love our independent streamers, and It Was a Thing. And don't forget, we're also on YouTube where you can like and subscribe to our channel and hit that notification bell so you can be aware of what we have in store next week. And next week, we've got a whole lot to talk about next week. First of all, we have Greg and Mike are going to watch the beginning of the UFL. USFL? No. XFL? No. Now they're all one happy family. Now they're united.
Yes, that's already out now on It Was a Thing on TV.com, so you can go back in the archives and listen to that. So you'll know by then who's already won in week one of the UFL 2024. I say 2024 because there's already another UFL back in 2009. That is a future entry too.
And then we have who we are inducting into our Hall of Fame this year. It is a fully stacked lineup. You're not going to want to miss it if you haven't listened to it already.
But next week,
baseball's back, guys.
Oh, thank God.
Games That Matter are back. And also, the chicken's back.
The chicken? The chicken. Oh, the chicken.
Now, hold on a second. For us people who are a little older, it's not the chicken. It's the San Diego chicken.
Hey, it's the famous San Diego chicken. You put some respect on his name.
Well, he's not just the chicken. He is the San Diego chicken. I know he's the famous San Diego chicken, but don't like simplify it down to he's the chicken. No, 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 no. The San Diego chicken, damn it. That's his name, in my opinion. Don't try to prove me wrong.
And the famous San Diego chicken is going to teach us the proper way to play the beautiful game of baseball.
And also a Hall of Fame catcher for the Cincinnati Reds.
Are you talking about SNK pitchman Johnny Bench?
Yes. In fact, I am talking about SNK pitchman Johnny Bench. Wait, hold on. He's a pitchman for SNK, the video company?
No, SNK, the suit place. Wannabe Men's Warehouse.
I would have loved it if Johnny Bench was plugging King of Fighters. Or baseball stars. Everyone loves baseball stars.
Well, speaking of baseball stars, you're going to hear a lot of them probably named next week.
They're all going to help us learn how to play baseball right and proper next time right here on It Was a Thing on TV. For Greg, for Mike, I'm Chico. Thank you ever so much for listening. Please be kind to one another, and we will see you for the next one.
Wow! Tool time for 200.
This term for a long-handled gardening tool can also mean an immoral pleasure seeker. Ken.
What's a hoe?
No. Whoa. 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 They teach you that in school in Utah, huh? Al.
What's a rake?
A rake is right. Tool. Hoe. Back with Double Jeopardy in a moment.